Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Michael Giorgio is a longtime Wisconsin resident who lives in Waukesha. Nancy Rathbun is a longtime Wisconsinite who left for Tennessee for a time before coming back. But regardless of where they live, the Badger State is front and center in both writers' new mystery novels.
Giorgio's Justice Comes Home is set in a fictional small Wisconsin city in the 1940s, while modern-day Milwaukee is home to Rathbun's Cash Kills. The two books were recently released, and Michael Giorgio and Nancy Rathbun are here to talk more about them. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What do you each like most about writing mysteries versus any other kind of fiction?
I've always been a mystery reader, although I read a lot of other fiction too. But to me, what appeals is that factor of the puzzle and the fact that, in my mind, a good mystery always ends with justice being served. The bad guy gets it in the end. Now, I know that there are mysteries that don't follow that formula, but that is probably what appeals to me most.
How about you, Michael Giorgio? Is the resolution appealing to you?
I prefer mysteries that actually do end as opposed to the open-ended ones. I like to help characters get out of bad situations, too. There's that side of it, helping the innocent get their justice and their freedom in some cases.
What they say about journalism is comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable.
That works.
Yeah. They say that about ministry, too.
Where do you think – I imagine both of you are fairly avid mystery readers. Where do things go wrong? Where do the two of you decide to just put the mystery down or throw it across the room?
When there's too many characters and they're too cardboard, it's easy to plot, but the characters have to work too, or else it's not worth reading.
And for me, it's really a distraction when the book is badly written. Poorly written work just can only take my attention for a limited amount of time. I understand that, you know, anybody can get a typo in their book. But bad grammar, repeated typos, repeated spelling errors, there's so much of that out there. And it's such a huge distraction when you're reading.
Well, and in mystery, I mean, one of the aspects of mystery writers that always impresses me is that you really do have to be just as sharp as your detective. If you mess something up in the logic of your cases, you're going to hear it from your readers.
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
I've had to go back and dig myself out of many a hole.
It's a lot of pressure.
It is.
In Justice Comes Home, I thought I knew who did it. And my character kept saying, couldn't be. And I had to listen because it wasn't working the way I wanted it to go.
Well, and you anticipated my next question. So let's talk about craft a little bit. How much outlining do you each do before you kind of set the characters and the story in motion?
I always start out thinking I have a good outline, a very general outline, because I know that as the story progresses, things are going to occur that I didn't anticipate. But quite often, like Michael said, my outline gets turned on its head by virtue of the characters. And I know this sounds crazy. I'm really not schizophrenic. But the characters want to do things and want you to take them places that you didn't anticipate. And you need to do it, or your work will not be as good.
Is there sort of organic nature of what these characters are up to?
In my case, yes. Yeah.
And in mine, too. Like I said, my idea of the killer changed. I knew how it was done. And I realized that the clues were not pointing to the right person. So I changed who did it to agree with my character. And then I had a character popped up in the fourth chapter who was supposed to have one line. She keeps coming back. She's there four times. She has a piece of the answer, and she's in the sequel that I'm working on.
Well, and so this is, I think, as good a time as any to talk a little bit about the hero at the center of each of your books. And yours in Michael Giorgio, your case, is not actually a private investigator.
Nope.
He is very much a public investigator.
He is. He's the chief of police in Devlin's Crossing, Wisconsin, which doesn't exist. It's midway between Madison and Milwaukee if you want to look for it. I just took out, say, Jefferson County and plunked in Devlin's County, and we were off.
Well, and so give us a thumb. These are mysteries, and so part of the beauty of it is letting readers uncover the mystery as it unfolds. But talk about the crime that sets the story in motion.
Okay. In the case of Justice Comes Home, it's actually based on a real event in Waukesha. There was a party in Waukesha in 1945, Labor Day weekend, to celebrate the end of the war. And there were 20-some thousand people on the streets of Waukesha and only 19,000 living there. And I thought, what a cool setting for a murder. Waukesha didn't have one, so I had to make one. And so I made up my own town to go with it, and it took off from there.
It's obviously not giving too much away. Who's murdered?
The first victim is Carter Fairfax. He owns the burlesque, which most people in town do not want on Main Street, but there it is.
And like any good mystery, there are any number of people who might want to see harm done to him.
He's the black sheep son of the wealthiest family, and then the chief's almost daughter-in-law. She would have been had his son not died. Is a dancer there because she's locked in a horrible contract. And there's all sorts of people who wanted to see him gone, including the chief.
This is really a mid-century small Wisconsin town noir.
Right, but it's not as dark as noir. It's got a lot of humor to it. At least I think it does. Hopefully people agree with that.
Well, Nancy Rathman, introduce us a little more to Angelina Bonaparte.
Well, thank you for pronouncing her name correctly.
At least I could do.
Yeah. Angie doesn't like to be called Bonaparte. She's a Milwaukee gal, middle age. I never specify exactly what her age is. Rather feisty, rather very capable. She's a private investigator. And she's has a new client whose name is Adriana Johnson. Adriana's parents were murdered in what the police thought was a robbery gone bad at their little hardware store. But after the will is read, Adriana finds out that her parents, whom she thought were really working poor, have bank accounts worth millions. And she doesn't know where the money came from. She doesn't know if it's legitimate. And she doesn't know if she wants to keep it.
And before long, other people start dying off.
They do. So Angie goes to talk with Adriana's lawyer, and when she arrives at the lawyer's office, she finds his legal secretary lying dead in front of his desk, shot in the head. And that's the first murder, and the story goes from there.
Where Michael Giorgio's novel is set in just about 70 years ago, yours is modern-day Milwaukee.
It's contemporary, yes.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a particular radio station actually gets a cameo reference.
You do. Imagine that. Yeah. I do listen to Lake Effect all the time, so I had to throw it in there. There are a lot of references in the book to Milwaukee landmarks and local places that people will recognize.
And that's what I was going to drive at. It must have been actually kind of a kick to weave this mystery in and among places that you know well.
It was fun, and I get a lot of feedback from that. Even people as far away as I had a reviewer from New Zealand make a remark about the Milwaukee setting, that she really enjoyed it. So.
What was it that appealed to you about setting your novel so long ago?
I started in writing radio dramas, of all things, and they were big then. So I was constantly listening to them, hearing the voices then. And I just wanted to keep them alive a way I could do it.
I wonder, as mystery writers, actually, Nancy, something you said as you were coming into the studio, you noticed, actually both of you noticed this chair we have out in the lobby of the radio station with an antenna on it. And your first instinct was that it was an electric chair. Is there something, I hate to use the word twisted, but when you're a mystery writer, do you see things through a lens that says, how could I make this a murder weapon?
I do. I have to admit it. I was at a hotel where there was a fire alarm that went off in the middle of the night, and there were a group of us writers there that were sharing a room. And as we went down the stairwell, we were saying, this would be a great way to murder somebody. I think our minds are twisted that way.
Oh, yeah. Both Nancy and I were at a retreat several years ago through All Writers, and we were in the middle of nowhere in the woods, and this young woman came in. And everyone else was all paranoid. Is there someone with her? Are we going to be attacked? We're sitting there plotting it.
I'm looking around this radio studio with some level of concern about the various things that could crop up as murder weapons.
Well, the good thing is that what we do in our heads generally doesn't make it any farther than the page.
Generally.
Generally.
Is there a gene in each of you that maybe it's a gene, maybe just a part of your psyche that, you know, deep down, do you feel like maybe you missed your calling? You could have been an investigator?
Partly. Solving the puzzle part, sure. Going and seeing the crime scene and the blood splatters and all that, no thanks. I'll pass.
Yeah, I'm not too much into gore. Because my investigator is set in a contemporary scene, I have had to do some investigation into how crime scene analysis is done and
forensics, in other words.
Forensics, yeah. And gotten in. I mean, if it's true that all of our email is being watched, I'm probably on some government list because I Google a lot of strange things for the sake of my story.
Such as?
In short stories, I've used a lot of poisons, that things like that. I've looked for recipes they could be put into. And
Have you read The Poisoner's Handbook by Deborah Blum?
I have. And my sister is a nurse, so I've been known to email her and say, okay, this is what I want someone to look like. How can I get them there?
Well, I'm fortunate. My sister is an RN, and she always says to my brother-in-law, I know ways to kill you that would not be detected. So
this is somebody you want to stay on fairly good terms with.
We're good friends, yeah.
Michael, you mentioned a sequel. There is one in progress.
I am about 40 pages away from finishing the first draft.
Nancy, this is the second novel with Angie, right?
Yes.
And will there be more?
I'm at the beginning of the third novel, just about 50 pages in. I plan that there will be more. I can't see any reason why Angie can't continue for a while.
As we're having this conversation, you're about to do a couple of public appearances involving your books. Talk a little bit about the relationship between a mystery writer and your audience.
I think people are fascinated by mystery writers and mystery novels in particular. It's a little bit hard for a writer to step out there. Most of us are rather introverted. I don't have a problem with public speaking. I did a lot of other things like that earlier in my life. But to face an audience with this work that you've invested so much in, it's like, I always say, it's like putting your child on the bus to kindergarten and hoping nobody will be mean to them.
Mm-hmm. And they're sharp. They remember details that I forgot.
Yes.
All the time.
Well, Michael Giorgio, Nancy Rathbun, congratulations to both of you, and best of luck. I hope there are lots more to come.
So do I.
Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you.
Nancy Rathbun's latest mystery is called Cash Kills. Michael Giorgio is the author of Justice Comes Home.
They'll both talk about their books at this weekend's Southeast Wisconsin Festival of Books at UW-Waukesha. They'll also appear together at an event next Thursday evening at Books & Company in Oconomowoc. And that is Wednesday's edition of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for listening today. And please join us right back here tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, your NPR station in Milwaukee.
Coming up at 12 noon today, it's Here and Now from NPR and WBUR in Boston. But right now, stay tuned because it's 11 o'clock and Fresh Air is next.